Abstract Gamer, Episode 1. Today I discuss the Shogi family of games in general and Chu Shogi in particular. Hello, and welcome to the Abstract Gamer. My name is Joe Peterson. In this episode, I'm going to start off by explaining a little bit about what I hope to do with this podcast and why I decided to create my own podcast. Then I'll talk about the Shogi family of games in general, and I'll wrap it up by talking about my favorite game in that family and, in fact, my favorite game overall, Chu Shogi. This is my first podcast, so please give me any feedback that you think will help me improve. I've been listening to some of the other gaming podcasts and thought that podcasting sounded like a good way for me to give back to the gaming community. I like to talk about games, and there doesn't seem to be any podcasts that really focus on abstract strategy games. Really, I don't expect to get much more out of it other than personal gratification. I'm calling it the Abstract Gamer because I am very interested in abstract strategy games, but while I will focus primarily on abstracts, I'm not going to limit myself strictly to abstract strategy games. I'll also talk about designer games, party games, card games, and maybe an occasional RPG or war game or computer game. I won't be discussing sports too much, but who knows, something might creep in. Alright, so who am I and why do I think I have the right to start up a podcast? My name's Joe Peterson, as I said, and I don't really have any special qualifications for this podcast. I've been playing games for most of my life. The first games I remember playing are Go Moku and chess against my dad. We played a lot of card games while growing up, mostly Pitch and Pinochle, but occasional Euchre and Spades too. And I also played many of the older American games like Monopoly and Clue, probably like most American kids did. I also branched out into pretty much any other game I could find opponents for. Once I got to high school, we wound up playing a lot of Risk. In college, I played Millborn and James Slavel's Shoguns, but mostly we played Spades and Pinochle. After college, I started playing Magic the Gathering a lot. I was a hobbyist for several years in the mid-90s, and this really allowed me to meet other gamers. I hadn't really been around anyone that I would consider a gamer before that, so Magic really was my gateway into Euro games. After being introduced to this real world of games, it really became a passion of mine. I really enjoy playing designer games like Settlers of Catan, Puerto Rico, Carcassonne, etc., but I still have never lost my love of abstracts. For those of you who may not be familiar with these types of games, an abstract strategy game is a game of perfect information, where the theme is not integral to the gameplay. Many classic board games, including chess, Go, and Mancala, fit into this category. A purist will tell you that there can be absolutely no element of chance in an abstract strategy game. I'm not going to limit myself by that. I'm not necessarily a purist, and mostly that's because I don't have a category for games that have some chance involved. However, I will require that the strategy element outweigh the luck element by a significant factor. So I'm sure I could create different buckets for each type of game, but I figure there's no need. So now that we know what an abstract strategy game is, what makes a good abstract strategy game? Well, that is a whole can of worms, but here's my take. A good abstract strategy game should have simple rules. I don't mind if there are a couple situations that rarely come up that require special rules, and as you'll hear later when I talk about the line capture rules in Chu Shogi, I can even handle an occasional oddity, as long as it adds something significant to the game. Still, I think that simplicity is better. A good abstract strategy game should also have depth. You'll hear this word bandied about a lot when you talk about abstract strategy games. Basically, it means that you cannot see down the move tree too far. Along with depth, you'll probably hear that clarity is important. Basically, this means that you have to be able to see ahead a little ways. These are often talked about as opposite ends of a scale, but I'm not convinced that this is true. I think they are two different components of the same concept. Clarity is how well you can see the depth of the game. So I think you need to be able to see ahead several moves, but you shouldn't be able to see how the game ends at every branch, unless it's towards the very end of the game. The game should not have a first or second player advantage either. This is sometimes handled by giving the advantaged player some penalty, like not being able to play in the center when playing Hex. It can be handled by giving the player at a disadvantage extra points or some other handicap like Komi and Go. It can also be avoided by using the pie rule. That is, the first player moves and then the second player chooses whether to play second and continue on, or to trade sides with the first player, therefore having the first player play second. The game should also be able to be studied. I personally like to sit down and replay my games so that I can learn more about the game. I feel that a good game should cause some discussion afterwards. Oh, if you had done this, then it would have been a very different game. Just things along that lines.
I personally prefer to play with players who are only marginally better than I am. I learn from the games while still feeling like I have a chance to win. Then there's also this concept that, for lack of a better term, I'll call tension. In checkers, any suboptimal move will cause you to lose the game. In chess, there are often times when you can pick the second or third best move and it won't affect the game dramatically. I'm not convinced that tension is the right word for this concept, but it's the best I have for now, and I'll certainly make this the topic of a future podcast. The game must also be replayable, and by this I mean that it has to be fun to play. And when you play it, you have to see new potential, have new ideas about the game. The day I stop learning more about a game is the day I stop playing it. It also has to be exciting every time you play it. And this is difficult if you and your opponent are not equally skilled. Therefore, the best abstract strategy games are easy to handicap. This will make the game fun to play even if your opponent is not equally skilled. I'll be discussing handicapping in the very next episode. The best judge of a game, though, is after you play it, you have to want to play it again. If you enjoy the game well enough that at the end of the game you go, oh, let's play that again. If you lose, you think, ah, I understand what I did wrong. Okay, let's try again. Today, I'd like to introduce you to the Shogi family of games. Shogi is a Japanese cousin of chess, and they descended from the same spot. The rules aren't very difficult for people who are familiar with chess-like games. You move your pieces around the board in an attempt to capture your opponent's royal pieces. In most games, there is only one royal piece, but some start with or allow you to promote to have additional royal pieces. Shogi pieces are usually wedge-shaped and pointed. The pieces are not differentiated by color. This is important in several of the games because they're played with drops. That is, when you capture your opponent's piece, they don't leave the game. Instead, you put them aside and they are available for you to place on the board instead of moving a piece. This move is called a drop. The four smaller shogi games are played with drops, while the larger versions usually are not. One aspect of these games that I think adds a lot of ambiance to the game, but often makes them less accessible to people, is the fact that the pieces are identified by kanji. That is, the pieces, these flat wedges, are distinguished by the Japanese writing on them. They're not figurines like in chess, and this can be intimidating to a new player. When playing online or against a computer, you can sometimes use international pieces that have the moves represented symbolically on the piece, but commercial pieces have kanji for the piece name on it, and that means that if you don't read kanji, there is some memorization required or you'll need a cheat sheet. Additionally, almost every piece can promote to a stronger piece. However, each piece can only promote to one type of piece. It's not like a pawn in chess where you can promote to any piece you want. Instead, when you promote your reverse chariot, it will become a whale. You have no choice regarding what it will become. The games range in size from a 4x5 board with 10 pieces to a 25x25 board with a whopping 354 pieces. Setting up some of these larger boards is a long task on its own. Like chess and checkers, you can buy sets of varying quality. Unlike chess and checkers, you're not likely to find these in your friendly local game store. There are some very nice wooden boards and pieces available from Japan for several of the variants. Unfortunately, I cannot afford to import these. However, I did purchase my set of wood grain plastic pieces from George Hodges, pretty much the only English source of shogi variant equipment. There were a few nibs that required some filing, but overall the quality was quite good, and they feel really nice. I did not purchase any of his final boards, but I did make my own game boards. Next, I'd like to talk about my favorite of the shogi variants, Chu Shogi, also called Middle Shogi. The rules are pretty straightforward compared to what I talked about before. You're moving your pieces around in an attempt to capture your opponent's king and crown prince if they have promoted their drunk elephant. Yes, really, a drunk elephant promotes to a crown prince. So, the rules are pretty straightforward, however, you do need to learn the movement of 30 different pieces. The game is in the middle of the scale and is played on a 12x12 board. Each player has 46 pieces with a total of 21 different piece types. And if you're wondering how this means you have to learn 30 pieces, many of these pieces promote to new pieces. The promotion zone in Chu Shogi is the last four ranks. When you move into or out of or within this zone, you can promote your piece. However, you may never demote a piece. If you choose not to promote a piece at its first opportunity, then you may not promote it on the next move of that piece unless it captures. Yes, this means there could possibly be some bookkeeping involved, but generally it's not an issue. Chushogi is not played with drops. Like chess, and unlike shogi, when a piece is captured, it's dead. It cannot be dropped back into play. Most of the pieces have moves that will be familiar to players of games in the chess family. The lion is unique, though, and does require some explanation. The lion can move as a king in shogi and chess that can take up to two moves in a single turn, even if they both capture. It can also jump to any square that could be reached in two steps. There are some special rules that apply to the lion, which have the effect of making it more difficult to exchange lions. And in all cases, if a Kailin has promoted to a lion, it is treated as a lion for the purposes of these rules. If an opposing lion is two steps away from your lion, then your lion can only capture that opposing lion if that opposing lion is unprotected, with one exception that I'll mention soon. If your opponent captures your lion with a piece other than a lion, then you may not capture your opponent's lion immediately, unless you can do so with a second lion. Instead, you must wait at least one turn, after which you may capture your opponent's lion freely, subject to all the other rules, of course. If you are in a position to make a double capture with your lion, and the first piece captured is any piece other than a pawn or go-between, unpromoted, then if the second piece to be captured is a lion, it may be captured even if it's protected. This is that exception I mentioned. Okay, so you still with me? That is really the only rule that's a little scary. And that's not quite complete, but it's more than enough for this review. So you can see that the lion is really quite a powerful piece, and the rules preventing them from being traded makes them the focus of this game. So that's really it for the rules. As for how it plays, Chushogi and the other larger cousins of shogi are what I like to think of as the war games of abstracts. They generally take a long time to set up and a long time to play. They are big and have lots of maneuvering of your armies. With a timer, I struggle to keep my Chushogi games to 2 hours for each player. It's a very strategic game with several opportunities for tactical skirmishes that occur primarily in the middle and the end of the game. One thing that I find interesting is how unforgiving some games are to bad play. This can add tension to some games, like checkers, or it can add too much stress to others. I don't have a good single term for this concept, so if anyone out there has one, please send me an email at abstractgamer@gmail.com. I'm sure I'll use this as the subject of one of my future podcasts. Chushogi itself is fairly forgiving in the beginning simply because even the best players in the game make a lot of blunders still. You know, the blunders are in varying degrees. And this is simply just because there's a lot going on. And later in the game, if you start to worry about time, you are bound to make more blunders. So when played without a timer, there are a lot fewer blunders, but they still do occur. Okay, blunders aside, whoever makes the most efficient use of their moves when positioning their armies will usually get to choose the first theater of the battle, which can really be an advantage if you plan your attack correctly. In the beginning of the game, you need to maneuver your forces to where you want them to be positioned. Maybe you send in a small attack to try to gain a little material or throw off your opponent's game. Although the lion is the strongest piece on the board, the lion doesn't see a lot of action in the beginning. It generally is the first piece moved out and sits in front of your pawns, exerting a lot of influence in that region. It's very passive-aggressive. Some of you who are unfamiliar with the game may hesitate to believe me. In chess, you generally won't move your queen out in front of your pawns as soon as possible just to exert influence. She usually hides back among your other pieces, which keep her protected. However, the lion really is powerful enough that it can and should lead the attack by being out in front of your pawns. Anyway, once your pieces are positioned, you engage your opponent. And the goal in the mid-game is to gain a little material and make a path to get your lion into your opponent's territory, while trying to simultaneously create a moat so that your opponent can't get their lion into your territory. This idea of creating a moat deserves its own article on strategy, and maybe I'll write one up and put it on BoardGameGeek. Basically, the idea is that you're going to create a zone where your opponent cannot simply jump into your territory, but must go through this region that is completely protected. So when you're trying to break through your opponent's moat, you need to have several minor pieces to pave the way. In this whole process, you are trying to get ahead on ranged movers. That is, pieces that can move across the board in a single move, like bishops and rooks in chess. Another respectable goal in the mid-game is to promote some of the mid-level pieces into more powerful pieces. So really, there are three potential strategic objectives for the mid-game that I just listed, and I'm sure there are others. I love having choices. That's one of the things that really appeals about this game. In the end game, you're trying to use your superiority in force, either in a particular theater or overall, to break up your opponent's army and expose his king and capture it. So check and checkmate have no real meaning in Chushogi. I mean, you don't need to move to save your king. And this is important to remember because it's possible to have two royal pieces by promoting your drunk elephant, and if you get this second royal piece, you can sacrifice one if needed. I have yet to see a crown prince except when playing against the computer, but I have gotten close, and my opponent had to spend a lot of time maneuvering away from my king in order to deal with this drunk elephant. If you don't have the superior force in the endgame, then you really need to focus on sending in your forces that you can muster and try to gain some local superiority so that you can take advantage before your opponent can get reinforcements in on the defense. I really love this game. The lion capture rule takes some special attention, but I can live with it because the depth of strategy and tactics you get from the lion. I rate this game a 10 on BoardGameGeek. I love it. Have I said that already? As far as I'm concerned, it has everything except for the player base and popularity that it deserves. It's a game of pure skill where two players engage in single combat. When I play it, my sense of gestalt is really satisfied. It seems complete to me. It has a pretty decent handicapping system, even if it's not fully understood yet. So I can play my non-chess playing opponents and still have an interesting game. If you like abstract strategy games that are deep and wide, you'll probably like this game. I will put in a little caveat though, if you don't like abstract strategy games, you should stay away from this. It's a big game, it has a lot of pieces, though not as many as, say, Taishogi, and it does take a lot of maneuvering of your armies. If that appeals to you, then this is the game for you. If it doesn't appeal to you, well, you should probably stay away from it. In my final segment, I'm going to review feedback and talk about information that is applicable today but might not have any meaning in the future. If you're catching up and I'm already 3 or 4 episodes ahead of this, there's probably not much reason to listen past the feedback. This being my first show, I have no feedback yet. You may have noticed that the show is a little bland. I played with adding some music and some sound effects to the show for several hours and could never find the right music or effects. I tried to record a game of speed chess. I thought it'd be a great sound to use, but the recording turned out pretty bad. If anyone out there has any ideas on music that I can use or sound effects, please send me email at abstractgamer@gmail.com. I understand the sound quality isn't perfect yet. I'm still working on that, and my next show should be better, and I'll continue to improve after that. You can send me any additional comments or suggestions to abstractgamer@gmail.com. And please join me next time when I will discuss handicapping in the first segment and the gift project games in the second segment. In the meantime, keep playing games and having fun. Thanks for listening.